Hello, welcome to the Leicester Mercury Talking Newspaper for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, February the 8th, 9th and 10th. It is produced by Vista. Our telephone number 0116 249 8839. And items are selected and read by Marion, Margaret and Mary. And Ian is recording it for us. Now, sunrise and sunset time for the week beginning Monday, February the 12th. Sunrise, 7:26 a.m. Sunset, 5:12 p.m. And we begin with the headline for Thursday, February the 8th. I've got a bomb. You will be first to die. A man accused of telling a fellow passenger he had a bomb on a train claimed he actually said bum, a court has heard. De Leon Harris, aged 32, is on trial at Leicester Crown Court, accused of falsely telling the woman he had a bomb on a train from Leicester to Birmingham on Wednesday, September the 20th, last year. Yesterday, as the trial got underway, the female fellow passenger told the jury Harris had said directly to her, "How about this then? I have got a bomb. You will be the first to die, and you will be at my mercy." When asked how sure she was she had heard the defendant say those words, she replied she was 100% sure. However, the jury was told that Harris, from Kettering, but now living in Newport, claimed that the woman must have misheard him and that he said words to the effect of, "I'm going to put my bum on this seat." Recalling the incident, the woman told the court she had got on the train at Leicester and sat on her own in the carriage, which was not busy. There was a woman sitting near her, but across the aisle. She noticed Harris sitting with and talking to a group of men in their early 20s. The witness said, "It was a pretty quiet carriage. He was asking the lads if they had any sweets." She said he soon turned his attention on her, asking if he could sit next to her. He said, "I'm going to sit down between these two beautiful ladies." And I said, "I would rather you didn't, because there were loads of other seats he could have sat in, and I just wanted a quiet journey." She said Harris then said, referring to herself and the other woman, "Well, how about two ugly ones then?" He asked why he could not sit next to her, and she said, "I explained I had a boyfriend. I just said it wasn't appropriate, and I wasn't interested in his advances. He said he had a girlfriend, and I said, 'You shouldn't be making comments like that, should you then?' And I said it jokingly." Asked if she was feeling uncomfortable with Harris at that point, she said no. She told the court, "It wouldn't be the first time a lad or a man has tried to flirt with me, so I just tried to laugh it off, saying, 'You shouldn't say stuff like that.' That's when he turned and said those comments." Referring to the alleged comments about the bomb, she said, "He looked at me completely cold when he said those words. It shocked me. I've never had anyone say anything like that to me before. I remember those words really clearly. I was really surprised those words came out of his mouth." She said after making the alleged comments, Harris moved off into another carriage. She added, "The boys on the table said, 'Did you hear what he said?' And I said, 'That's not right to say that sort of stuff.' And they said, 'You need to call someone about that.' The woman said the men told her Harris had some bags with him, which made her more concerned. She contacted her boyfriend and told him about the alleged incident, and he rang the police. Later, she said she heard the train conductors talking about terrorism, which made her think they were onto it. The train was stopped at Hinckley, where all passengers were told to get off. While waiting on the platform, she said, Harris asked the conductor she was speaking to why the train had stopped. The woman referred to his comments about having a bomb. But Harris insisted he did not have one, she said. Under cross-examination, Jonathan D., defending Harris, said to the woman, "Within context, there had been a number of terrorism incidents in the past months. You would have been a bit sensitive." She replied, "That's exactly what it was. I thought with all the incidents, it's serious. These sorts of threats shouldn't be taken lightly." Harris denies obstructing the railway and communicating false information, alleging the presence of a bomb. The trial continues.
Proposal to build 73 flats on derelict site near Highcross. Plans to build more than 70 flats on a patch of land near Highcross Shopping Centre have been submitted to Leicester City Council. The 73 homes, including one- and two-bed flats and studios, would be spread across blocks ranging from 4 to 7 storeys in height. The plot between Great Central Street, Highcross Street and All Saints, open, in the city centre, covers 1,056 square metres, roughly 1.5 football pitches. The site has been empty since the factories previously there were demolished in 2005. There is a small perimeter wall in place which the developers are seeking permission to knock down. Plans have been submitted by London property consultancy Montague Evans on behalf of All Saints Leicester Limited. The submitted planning documents said, "The proposals will deliver high-quality residential accommodation, which will make an important contribution to meeting the identified housing needs across the city. The proposals wholly align with the principles of sustainable development, bringing about the reuse of a currently vacant and derelict brownfield site in a highly accessible location close to Leicester's central core." The application said the site is within the wider Leicester Waterside regeneration area, which has been highlighted in planning policy as an area for development. Proposed additional features include a basement level with 21 car parking spaces and storage for 84 bicycles. There would be a communal roof terrace for residents' use. If approved, the flats would be close to another major project to build 2 hotels and office space in Vaughan Way, which are expected to open in 2019. The project includes a 150-room Novotel, created alongside a 100-room apart hotel for Adagio. Together, they are expected to create about 60 jobs. The apartment hotel will offer people longer stay options with the convenience of a hotel. The buildings will go up on derelict land in Vaughan Way, opposite Highcross Shopping Centre, between Great Central Street and Highcross Street.
Parents to face £70 fine if they park in school's clear zone. Parents are to be banned from parking in streets around a primary school in a bid to sort out traffic problems, including the blocking of an ambulance. Teachers at Millfield Lead Academy in Hat Road, Braunston Town, say there has been a catalogue of problems with parking outside the school gates and in surrounding residential roads, including vehicles parked at junctions, blocked driveways, and paramedics being impeded. Now, an experimental school clear zone is to be set up to encourage parents and children to cycle or walk. The trial will take place from Monday, April the 9th, and last 6 months. The school clear zone involves no waiting restrictions being put in place from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. and 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. on streets around the school. The roads within the zone include Hat Road, Freeboard Road, Woodcote Road, Lubberthorpe Road and Pitts Avenue. Many schools in the county have clear zones immediately outside their entrances, but these are advisory and do not extend into neighbouring streets. Under the trial, drivers breaking the restrictions will be fined £70. Millfield head Pete Wood said, "The school receives regular calls from residents, parents and carers raising concerns about the parking of vehicles on the roads surrounding the school. We have regularly requested that vehicles are parked safely, but the situation seems to have deteriorated, so we support any actions which improve things." Councillor Blake Payne, the County Council's Cabinet Member for Highways and Transport, said, "Through a grant from the Access Fund, traffic management measures can be put in place to improve a serious problem with congestion around Millfield Academy. We also think that introducing the school clear zone presents an opportunity for children and their parents to consider other modes of travel to and from school, such as cycling and walking. Millfield Academy has already been recognised with a bronze medal by the National Mode Shift Stars Schools Award Scheme for demonstrating excellence in supporting cycling, walking and other forms of sustainable travel. During the trial, park and stride facilities will be available for parents to park a short distance away from the school and walk in with their child. Cycle training and walking initiatives will also be promoted during the Clear Zone trial for children to get involved in. Parents and residents will be given a chance to provide feedback once the school Clear Zone consultation period starts. If people require more information regarding the school Clear Zone trial, contact the County Council's Customer Services team on 0116 305 002 or email choosehowyoumove@leicester.gov.uk.
Lee was carrying out an act of generosity on Christmas Day, and it's not right to fine him. City Mayor Sir Peter Soulsby says he will cancel the fine given to a charity volunteer who parked in a bus lane on Christmas Day to help a homeless person. Sir Peter has decided to intervene in the case of Army veteran Lee Williamson, who was told to pay £70 by Leicester City Council after he stopped his car in a bus lane in London Road outside the rail station. Mr. Williamson said he had pulled over to give a blanket, hat, scarves, gloves and some festive treats to a rough sleeper. The case, which was first reported in the Leicester Mercury, has received national media coverage, with the council coming in for heavy criticism. Sir Peter said, "One way or another, I will get the fine cancelled." Politicians should not normally get involved in parking enforcement matters, but this is clearly an exceptional case. Lee was carrying out an act of generosity on Christmas Day, and it is not right to fine him for that. However, he said it was still important to enforce the no stopping restriction outside the station. Sir Peter said, "We brought in the restrictions there because there was an incident with a cyclist who died at that spot." He added, "I am not setting a precedent. We will continue to enforce, and I do not blame our parking team who were doing their job. However, in this case, there is a clear argument to cancel the ticket, and I will make sure that happens." Reacting to the news, Mr. Williamson said, "It feels fantastic. It's great. I'm glad that common sense has prevailed." On Tuesday, a businessman living in France, David Poole, contacted Mr. Williamson and sent him the money to pay for the fine. Mr. Williamson offered to return this, but was told to donate the money to charity. Explaining his action, Mr. Poole said, "I don't want him to be put off doing a good deed in the future." Mr. Williamson has received multiple offers to pay his fine and is now directing those people to "Once We Were Soldiers," the charity he volunteers for, which supports homeless veterans. He said, "Each person that asks, I've directed to the charity page, so that's one good thing that's come out of all this."
Breakfast Club is a boon for veterans. An army veteran has told how a breakfast club, which is celebrating its first anniversary, has helped him reconnect with his past. Charnwood Armed Forces Breakfast Club is an opportunity for serving and former servicemen and women and their families to get together, enjoy breakfast and have a chat. It will celebrate its anniversary on Saturday. Len Witts, 71, from Shepshed, joined the club when it started and has been going since. "I decided to join the club to meet other veterans and talk about our past experiences," said Len, who served for 12 years as a corporal in the motor transport section of the Army Royal Signals Corps. "My wife and I go along together, and I've met lots of veterans, even some I served with in the Royal Signals. I didn't know some of them lived around here, so it's been great to meet again. For me, the club is about sharing stories and reconnecting with the past, but it also supports people who are a lot older and somewhat isolated. It gives them a chance to socialise and get that support and advice if they need it. I'd recommend the Breakfast Club to any veterans or those serving and their families. It's a great opportunity to meet people who share similar experiences." The club is organised by Victoria Kumba, Armed Forces Community Covenant Development Officer at Charnwood, Melton and Rushcliffe Borough Councils. It attracts between 35 and 50 people to each meeting. The anniversary breakfast will be from 9:30 to 11:30 at the Toby Carvery in Loughborough. There will be a birthday cake to mark the occasion. The club meets every second Saturday of the month, and a full English breakfast is £5, including unlimited tea and coffee. Booking is not required, but for more information, you can email Victoria, and that's with a capital V, dot Kumba, C-O-O-M-B-E-R, at talk21.com.
Hunters accused of entering town park and killing fox. A group of huntsmen has been accused of entering a country park and killing a fox. The alleged incident happened in Melton Mowbray Country Park. Police were called just after 1 p.m. on Saturday, February the 3rd. Officers attended the scene due to an allegation by a member of the public that a fox had been killed illegally. A force spokesman said, "Officers have begun an investigation into the circumstances surrounding the incident. Inquiries are in the early stages. It has been alleged members of Beaver Hunt were involved." Leicestershire People Against Fox Hunting posted about the incident on Facebook. The update read, "Unfortunately, a fox was chased and killed today by the Beaver Hunt in Melton Mowbray Country Park." A member of the group added that picture evidence had been handed to police. However, other people described the allegations as fake news and questioned the lack of publicly shared images or video. The Beaver Hunt has been contacted twice by the Mercury regarding the incident, but had not responded by the time of publication. Police have urged any witnesses to contact officers by calling 101 leicestermercury.co.uk.
Celebration of Poland songs and culture on the way. The 10th Polish Folklore Festival takes place at De Montfort Hall next month. Organiser, the Federation of Polish Folklore Groups in the United Kingdom, promised it would be a vibrant celebration of traditional Polish dance, songs and music. The festival will mark the 25th anniversary of the first event, which was held in Leamington Spa in 1993. The Federation said Leicester was chosen for the 10th event due to its great cultural diversity, its central location in the East Midlands, where more than 150,000 Polish people live, as well as for the enthusiastic hosts. More than 400 performers from 14 song and dance ensembles will take to the stage of De Montfort Hall on March the 10th and 11th. They include groups from London, Manchester, Huddersfield, Dublin, Southampton, Slough, Cambridge and Birmingham. The Leicester group, Pulsey, will be showcasing a wide variety of national and regional folk songs and dances, all in authentic traditional costumes. Anja Spetk, chairman of the Federation of Polish Folklore Groups in the UK, said, "We're very excited about this anniversary event. We have more participant groups and performers than ever before taking part, making for a full and varied programme. The event will be a truly spectacular performance, showcasing authentic Polish songs and dances from many regions of Poland. Some are elegant and romantic, while others are lively and acrobatic. Many of the groups will be performing new sets, which have been choreographed especially for the event, all in costumes that have been reproduced either by themselves or by specialists in Poland, following traditional patterns and designs. We encourage everyone who enjoys being entertained to come along to what promises to be a very impressive and memorable show. For more details and tickets, contact De Montfort Hall's box office or their website, all in lowercase, demontforthall.co.uk.
Officers break down barriers with a brew. Cops in cafes has been a controversial sight in recent months, but in one area, officers are being positively encouraged to be spotted with a cuppa. Police community support officers in Charnwood are making sure they are visible and contactable across the area. Instead of holding formal beat surgeries, which are not always well attended, Sergeant Leon Kirkpatrick said he thought it would be a good idea to get PCs to sit in busy cafes so residents can sit in comfort and chat through any issues or concerns they might have. It is also a good way for Charnwood's dedicated neighbourhood teams to be visible and get to know people, he said. Sergeant Kirkpatrick said, "Rather than sit in the police station doing paperwork where no one can see them, I thought it made better sense for our PCSOs to sit in a busy location in the heart of their neighbourhood and make themselves available to talk and chat with people. Last week, an officer sat in a cafe for 2 hours and spoke to 26 people, so it is already proving popular. It's a great way of breaking down the barriers between the police and the public and will show residents their officers are easily available should they have a question or just want to say hello and find out who their local teams are. So if you see an officer in a cafe using a laptop, then they are working and are happy to talk to you. Just go and say hello." Officers and PCSOs are now equipped with computers that can be used at any location, so they can sit in a cafe, catch up on emails and paperwork. They will have a sign on the table telling people that they are working and that they are free to talk. If anything needs to be discussed in confidence, the officer can arrange that. In April last year, The Sun published a picture of 8 Plymouth police officers on a break at a cafe, with critical comments that they were not tackling crime. In January, a police officer was accused of wasting taxpayers' money while queuing to buy food during a shift in Oakham. And there's a quote here from Sergeant Leon Kirkpatrick. "I thought it made better sense for our PCSOs to sit in a busy location in the heart of their neighbourhood and make themselves available to talk and chat with people."
Headlines for Leicester Mercury, Friday, February the 9th. Mum's Hope, thanks to you. £45,000 raised in 3 weeks for pioneering cancer treatment. A mum has begun pioneering cancer treatment after well-wishers raised £45,000 to pay for it in just 3 weeks. Amelia Martin, who has a brain tumour, hopes proton therapy in the Czech Republic will give her more time with son Dylan, who is six. A mum suffering from a rare and aggressive brain tumour says she has been overwhelmed by the generosity of supporters. Friends of Amelia Martin launched a desperate bid to raise £75,000 after discovering her tumour was inoperable. In 3 weeks, they have been able to raise nearly £45,000, enough to get Amelia, 41, to the Proton Therapy Centre in Prague in the Czech Republic. Amelia hopes the therapy will give her more precious time with her son Dylan, who is six. Due to the location of the tumour, which is affecting the muscles in her face, her sight and hearing, it is deemed inoperable. However, proton beam therapy could shrink it. Amelia from Anstey said, "There are lots of lovely, kind people and organisations that have raised and are still raising money for treatment. They are absolutely amazing." Donations have flooded in from cake sales, dress-up days, coffee mornings and jumble sales in Leicestershire and Ramsey, Cambridgeshire, where Amelia now lives. Friend Carla Mayo said, "It has been heartwarming to see the community pull together to help raise the money Amelia so desperately needs. I know everyone is thrilled to hear she's now in Prague beginning her treatment. Her friends and family have been working tirelessly to raise money for her." Amelia began getting pains in her head in 2013, but was told they were migraines by her GP. She was eventually diagnosed as having a grade 1 papillary meningioma. It grew quickly. In December 2013, she had 14 hours of surgery to partly remove the growth, and in January 2015, had radiotherapy to stop it from growing back. She also had a second brain tumour fully removed by surgery in October 2016. In November last year, however, Amelia received the devastating news that the tumour had returned and UK doctors told her there was nothing more that they could do. Her appeal was given a renewed sense of urgency last month when scans revealed her tumour had grown 5 to 6 centimetres in 2 months, meaning proton beam therapy was needed as soon as possible. Amelia is expected to be in Prague for the next 5 weeks. Childhood friend Kathy Sellers from Leicestershire set up a crowdfunding page. She said, "Amelia is the kindest, most positive person I have ever met. She is much loved. She wants to fight the tumour so she can watch her son grow up and be around him for as long as possible." Proton therapy uses a beam of protons to pinpoint the tumour and kill off cancerous cells. It is more precise than other treatments, and therefore damage to other organs or tissues is prevented or minimised. 2 proton therapy facilities are being built at the Christie NHS Foundation Trust in Manchester and University College London Hospital, NHS Foundation Trust. Services are expected to start this year at the Christie and in 2020 at UCLH, making them the first of their kind in the UK. Donations can still be given to Amelia's fund, and any money not spent on treatment and associated costs will be donated to cancer charities. justgiving.com/crowdfunding/Amelia Newby.
Scout's £1,000 boost helps keep air ambulance flying. Scouts have given the air ambulance a lift after presenting it with £1,000. The 3rd Market Harbour Scout Group presented a representative from the county's air ambulance with a cheque after raising funds at the group's annual outing for Santa's Sleigh, which takes Santa around the town to see and meet excited children in December. A scout spokesman said, as usual, the great people of Market Harbour donated very generously, enabling the scouts to be able to give this large gift to such a worthwhile cause. There was a great turnout of scouts, cubs, beavers and sleigh committee members for the presentation, and the children listened intently as the air ambulance representative gave a talk detailing the costs involved in running the helicopter, how valuable it is to the community, and some fun facts. The Third Market Harbour Scouts are looking for adults to join their team of leaders, so ring Paul Allenby on 07977 145 779 for more details.
Can you solve the mystery of my missing fingertip? A man who woke up after a night out in Leicester with the tip of his finger missing and blood pouring down his hand is desperate to know what happened to him. Dwayne Thompson, 26, went out for a meal with friends in Leicester city centre and said he cannot remember anything after taking a picture in the restaurant at 10:30 p.m. He said he woke up on the ground in the old bus depot site opposite Abbey Park in Abbey Park Road at 2:30 a.m. the next morning, with the tip of his middle finger on his left hand missing. This was his only notable injury, except for a few scratches on his legs and a rip in the back of his shirt. He said, "At the time, it was just one of those things. It started playing on my mind. I'm feeling anxious about the night." He took a picture with his girlfriend during a night out on Friday, November the 3rd last year, and said after that his memory is blank. Dwayne said, "I remember the whole night until that point. I had a three-course meal and a couple of drinks. It's a big step from a meal to where I ended up. It's a mystery. There are pictures on his phone that appear to show Abbey Park, but that is the only documentation he has of the missing hours. He has had to have surgery on the finger to remove part of the bone which was left and to move skin over the wound. The Beaumont Lees man also missed 5 weeks of work as a domestic cleaner at Charnwood Bakery. The tip of his finger is still painful. The incident also led to problems between Dwayne and his girlfriend. She wants to know where he was and suspects him of being unfaithful. She called him after he disappeared from the restaurant, although he has no recollection of it. "Somebody out there saw me that night," he said. "I want to prove I've not done anything." He said solving the mystery would give him the peace of mind and allow him to prove he did not cheat. He has asked friends he was with if they know where he went, but they are unable to help. Dwayne was wearing a light purple plaid shirt, black jeans and a black fire trap boots on the night. He has reported the incident to the police and an officer has been assigned to investigate. A police spokeswoman said, "We are making inquiries. But anyone with any information or who believes they saw Mr. Thompson on the night of Friday, November the 3rd, or early hours of Saturday the 4th, is asked to call Leicestershire Police on 101.
Poor chap. Alternative to cutting down church trees put forward. Council bosses say they are willing to discuss potential late changes to a scheme to revamp a Leicester churchyard after sustained protests about the potential felling of 21 mature trees. Leicester City Council wants to revamp the area around the 200-year-old St George's Church in the cultural quarter. The authority said the area opposite Curve is gloomy, unsafe and used by drug addicts. The council's £900,000 scheme to revamp the churchyard involves felling trees, which it said would open out the area and prevent water runoff from leaves and branches, damaging the Grade 2 listed Serbian Orthodox Church. However, Leicester Friends of the Earth and the Civic Society have been among the many critics of the scheme, who said the trees should be saved as they add to the character of the area, which is a key part of the city centre environment. Castle Ward councillor Patrick Kitterick has also argued against the felling of the trees. At a recent council meeting, he urged council environment spokesman and deputy mayor Adam Clark to consider alternatives to the current plan. Councillor Kitterick said the most problematic part of going through the churchyard was the turn of the footpath as it bends around the church. The bend prevents people seeing what or who is around the corner. The councillor joked, "The campaigners have come up with some very good ideas to sort that problem without demolishing the church. I don't think we will need to remove the trees either. One of the ideas is creating a straight path with clear lines of sight through the churchyard." Councillor Clark said, "Of course, any way we can achieve the principles of the project without removing so many trees. Any suggestions are very welcome." He said that in 2016, the council consulted people about the scheme, and as a result, a plan to fell 26 trees was reduced to the current proposal of 21. Councillor Clark said, "I recognise new ideas can come forward at a very late stage, and I welcome the ideas." He said he was happy to work with Friends of the Earth to get the right scheme in place. "As the heritage champion, I feel the obligation to promote the protection of a nationally significant building, part of built heritage, that was seen at the outset of the cultural quarter to be the heart of that area," he said. "I accept there are competing demands in that area. Yes, the trees are important. Yes, the sanctity of the church is important. Yes, the fact that people feel unsafe in that churchyard is important. What we as a city should want to do to ensure that the biggest piece of green space in the city centre is culturally vibrant and economically vibrant, where people feel safe and they do not find needles in that churchyard."
Man not guilty of bomb on train threat. A railway passenger has been cleared of making a threat to blow up a train. De Leon Harris said he was relieved the jurors who acquitted him at Leicester Crown Court had seen through everything. He told the Mercury afterwards, "It was something said on the train that was mistaken for something else. I said the word bum that someone thought was bomb. I will definitely be careful about who I speak to on the train in future. I don't think I'll speak to anyone. What happened was very distressing and my life has been on hold since then. It was a bit heavy-handed bringing in armed police to arrest me. Since then, I couldn't make any plans and missed out on a lot of travelling." Mr. Harris, a musician and songwriter, said, "The whole thing has been a real worry. I'd like to thank the jury and my barrister, Jonathan Dee, for putting my case fairly. Justice has been done today, and I'm very relieved." Mr. Harris was accused of allegedly telling a woman passenger who rebuffed him when he went to sit next to her that he had a bomb and she'd be the first to die. When he gave evidence in his defence, Mr. Harris told the jury of three women and nine men that he said to the passenger as he walked off something like, "I only wanted to rest my bum." The defendant, who was born in Montserrat and came to the UK as an adult, said he had spoken to her in a patois dialect, which I can't pronounce. The female passenger, aged 23, told the jury she had not misunderstood what had been said and was 100% sure she'd heard him say, "I've got a bomb." The prosecution alleged the incident happened on the 13:18 train from Leicester to Birmingham. It resulted in the defendant being arrested. The incident caused havoc to travellers, affecting 8 railway operators and 126 trains, of which 6 were cancelled, amounting to 981 minutes of lost time, costing £67,339. Mr. Harris of Dalkeith Avenue, Kettering, denied obstructing the railway or communicating false information alleging the presence of a bomb. He told the jury that when the train was held up at Hinckley Station, a guard told him a woman had accused him of saying something about a bomb. He said, "I was in shock. I didn't do anything." His barrister, Mr. D, said, "You realised it was a bit more serious when the armed police arrived?" And Mr. Harris said, "Yeah, I was in the waiting area. I seen the coppers coming over the bridge and some coming through the gate. One had his gun pointing at me. He was looking at me, making contact with my eyes. I didn't move because I didn't want them to shoot me. I cooperated with them. They had a gun on me, and I complied with their instructions." Mr. D asked, "How did you feel about having a gun pointing at you?" And Mr. Harris said, "I was scared. I wasn't giving them any reason to shoot me." He said he was on medication due to his mental health at that time, following a breakdown a few weeks earlier, and had consumed 2 cans of cider that day, but he was not that drunk. Mr. D asked, "Did you tell this woman you had a bomb on the train and she would be the first to die?" "No, I didn't," said Mr. Harris, who said he never intended to cause anyone fear or delay trains. He said he'd been playing rap music on his phone, which had to be turned down because it was too loud, and was engaging in some friendly banter with passengers. He was on his way to meet a disc jockey at New Street Station to discuss royalties for his music being played.
Support housing plan or gypsies can live on the land. A developer told neighbours that he would invite travellers to live on a vacant plot of land if they did not support his plans to build houses on the site. Wayne Rushton also said he could allow the space to overgrow into wasteland unless they back his plan to build 12 properties. He has now said he regretted sending the letter and had been drunk at the time he wrote it. In one letter to people living in Pinal Close, Broughton Astley, Mr. Rushton offered residents £250 per house if they wrote to Harborough District Council to back his application. The letter, a copy of which has been seen by the Mercury, reads, "I hereby confirm our intentions should we fail to obtain planning permission for around 12 dwellings as per the attached plan. 1. The land will be placed in a limited company without surplus fund, and the land will be left to overgrow into wasteland. 2. We shall invite some of our gypsy friends to station themselves on the land for as long as they wish to stay. We will provide a new water supply. Regardless of our strong stance on this matter, we hope you will support our pending planning application and avoid us having to take the above actions." The letter, dated January the 22nd, goes on to offer £250 to those who send a letter of support for the plans to the council. The offer is stated as being conditional on a photocopy being sent to the developer and confirmation from the council if the letter has been received. A second letter to residents dated January the 30th reads, "Further to my letter dated January the 22nd, it has been brought to my attention the offer of £250 could be misconstrued as a bribe rather than compensation for loss of amenity space. We therefore withdraw the offer." Recipients of the letters said they were shocked and disgusted by their contents. One, who wishes to remain anonymous, said, No one wants to see open space be taken away. There are lots of children who benefit from it. Jackie Duffy, manager of Leicestershire Project Gate, Gypsy and Traveller Equalities, said she would be astonished if travellers would relocate for this sort of request. She said of the letter, "It's offensive and it's preying on negative stereotypes." The community is wholly working towards challenging these stereotypes. We support the residents in standing up to this type of behaviour. A spokesman for Harborough District Council said, "We have written to the landowner stating that the letter is highly inappropriate and undermines the fundamental principles of the planning system." No planning application has been received. A recipient of the letter contacted the police, and a spokesman for the force said, "The person who contacted the police was given initial advice that no criminal offence had been committed. Officers will be recontacting the person with a view to discussing the matter further." And there is a statement here from the landowner. Mr. Rushton of Cannock, Staffordshire, said he has been dealing in property for 34 years. He said the £250 was more of an incentive for amenity. We wanted them to support us. I must admit, when I wrote the letter, I was under the influence of a drink. I say the letter was probably a mistake, and I did the second letter the next day saying we would retract the £250. I did regret the first letter. It was really just off the cuff. In the past couple of days, I wrote to my architect asking him to revise the plan. I was going to call a meeting with the residents and say I have no squabble with people. What do you really want to see on there? Would you mind seeing buildings on there? And would you mind a children's play area? It's not like we are horrible people. I would rather the community have something they want. It is our intention in the near future to contact the community to have a meeting to see what they want.
Pair get 11 years for Gran's murder. A former soldier and his mother killed his 84-year-old grandmother by giving her a cocktail of pills and whiskey before smothering her out of misguided belief that the murder was an act of mercy, a court has heard. Barry Rogers, 33, and his mother, Penelope John, 50, will each serve at least 11 years for murdering former nurse Betty Guy at her home in Pembrokeshire on November the 7th, 2011. At Swansea Crown Court yesterday, Mr. Justice Lewis said the pair had never accepted responsibility and that what they had done was murder, because the law does not permit one person to end the life of another. He said the killing was based on the wrong and misguided belief that Mrs. Guy was old and ill and wanted to die, and that she should, and that you should end her life. To that limited extent, the murder was based on a belief, a misguided belief, held by each of you that the murder was an act of mercy. Rogers and John, who were found guilty after a trial, nearly got away with the killing, but came under suspicion in 2015 after one of Rogers' ex-girlfriends reported him to the police. It emerged that the former technician in the Royal Corps of Signals had told three former partners he had killed his nan by putting a pillow over her face. Police arrested mother and son in November 2016 and placed a bug in John's home, which recorded them discussing the killing, including Rogers telling John she had nothing to worry about because it's me that's the one that's done the act. Paramedics were called to Mrs. Guy's home in the early hours of November the 7th, 2011 by John, who said her mother had died and had been suffering from cancer. Medics believed Mrs. Guy had died from natural causes and her body was cremated days later. Mr. Justice Lewis said Mrs. Guy, who he described as a cheerful, lively and well-liked person, was not terminally ill, did not have cancer, and was neither bedbound nor in unbearable pain. He said Rogers and John were equally culpable and each had their role to play in the agreement to end Mrs. Guy's life. "You, Miss John, decided that the time had come to kill your mother," he said. "You arranged for your son to come and carry out the killing. You gave your mother drugs, intending to sedate her. You, Barry Rogers, were the one to place the pillow over Mrs. Guy's face and to suffocate her." Earlier, the court heard a victim impact statement from Mrs. Guy's daughter, Lorraine Matthews, who said her mother loved life and loved a little giggle. In it, she said, "We grieved once after her death, and now we have to go through a different kind of grief." Miss Matthews said she was shocked that a member of my own family is capable of committing such a despicable act.
And now the headline for Saturday, February the 10th. Mown down on zebra crossing. A man using a zebra crossing was thrown into the air by a hit-and-run driver who smashed into him at full speed before leaving him in the road. The horrifying crash was captured on CCTV. The footage, which can be viewed on the Mercury website, shows the 61-year-old victim pause and then step onto the crossing before a silver 5-door hatchback comes into view and ploughs into him. The man is thrown over the side of the bonnet and lands in the road. The car leaves the scene without stopping. The incident happened in St Peter's Road, Highfields, Leicester, at 6:30 on Thursday. The victim was taken to Leicester Royal Infirmary, where he remains in a stable condition. His injuries have been described by police as non-life-threatening. Khadija Patel of nearby Lonsdale Road was one of a number of residents who rushed to the man's aid. Ms. Patel, who works as a healthcare assistant, said the man was bleeding from his head, but added he was so calm about it, he was being very brave. Although she did not see the hit and run happen, she has since seen the CCTV and said, "It's shocking, absolutely. It's scary." Another woman who helped the victim, who wants to remain anonymous, said, "Everyone just came and ran towards him. People started to bandage him and get him warm. We comforted him and he was in quite a lot of pain. How could someone just leave him without a care?" The crash happened at the crossroad junction with Wilner Street and Lonsdale Street, and the car was driven off without stopping along St Peter's Road towards East Park Road. Police are carrying out house-to-house inquiries as they try to track down the car involved. Sergeant Jim Purdy said, "This was a particularly nasty incident witnessed by a number of people. The area would have been busy with vehicles and pedestrians. We'd like to hear from anyone who's seen anything of this. If you have any information, you can help us with our investigation. If you've not already spoken to us, we'd like to hear from you." In the aftermath, St Peter's Road was described as dangerous by people in the area. They said accidents and drivers failing to pay attention to the zebra crossing were commonplace. Asmat Cahill, who works at Alif Groceries just yards from the scene, said he was not surprised at the latest incident. He said, "I've seen so many incidents on this road. People don't stop at the zebra crossing. People go too fast. It's a dangerous place." Mr. Khalil said the pedestrian hit by the vehicle was a good man who lives nearby. Abdi Samad Noor, aged 42, who lives in King's Newton Street, told the Mercury his wife was hit at the same crossing in April 2015. Makajama, aged 20, was 6 months pregnant at the time. The baby was fine, but Mrs. Jama suffered injuries which continued to cause her problems. Mr. Noor said that at the time a CCTV camera was not in place, and it was lucky that there was one to capture this recent incident. He said, I spoke to a solicitor and police after my wife was hit, but there was no camera and no witnesses. The City Council has responded to the concerns over safety in St Peter's Road. A spokesperson said, We don't yet know the full circumstances, but once we do, we will review safety and determine if there is a case for introducing additional measures. We work closely with the police to tackle dangerous driving and will intervene with road safety measures where it can be shown that they will make a difference.
School is getting better. A city secondary school told it required improvements has now been rated good by Ofsted. St Paul's Catholic School in Evington was inspected in January. The watchdog's report said it was good in most areas, but its 16 to 19 study programmes were outstanding. Inspectors said the head, Neil Lockyer, was well supported by senior leaders and had a clear vision for the school. They said teaching had improved and pupils made progress because the staff had a good knowledge of their subjects. Mr. Lockyer said it is always very heartening when any visitors to our school recognise the willingness, positive attitudes and hard work of our young people and the great commitment, determination and care of our staff. Inspectors praised the school's curriculum for being broad and balanced and frequently highly personalised. They said that governors were effective and dedicated and the behaviour of pupils was consistently good. Pupils were also said to be courteous, polite and respectful and demonstrated positive attitudes to learning. Attendance was said to be close to the national average, while the sixth form was outstanding. The report said leaders were relentless in their promotion of academic excellence. St Paul's has 1,090 pupils on its roll, with 168 in the sixth form. Mr Lockyer said, It is really good to see that Ofsted is now focusing much more on the equality and appropriateness of the curriculum as a way of improving the life chances of young people. This has always been incredibly important to us at St Paul's, so we were delighted that the inspectors recognised this and agreed with us. As pleased as we are with this inspection outcome, we continue to strive relentlessly to provide an exceptional Catholic education for all our pupils. Deputy City Mayor Councillor Sarah Russell, who leads on education, said, My congratulations go to everyone associated with St Paul's on a great result. To have the sixth form provision singled out as outstanding is particularly impressive. This takes the number of local authority schools rated good or outstanding in Leicester to 93 out of 103, which means 90% of our schools are now good or outstanding.
Awards Night provides cash lift for lifesavers. Staff and managers have raised more than £50,000 for Glenfield Hospital, inspired by one of their colleagues. Davidson's Homes employee, Jason Glover, suffered a near-fatal heart attack last year. He credits the hospital and the unwavering efforts of staff there for saving his life. At its first awards evening, the Leicestershire company celebrated the efforts of its staff and suppliers and raised money for Glenfield's cardiology ward. The evening featured a three-course dinner and entertainment from writer, broadcaster, actor and former Conservative MP Giles Brandreth. A total of £28,000 was raised on the night through sponsored tables and a series of raffles and games. Towards the end of the night, it was announced that the David Wilson Foundation would be matching that total, taking the figure to £56,000. Davidson's Home Sales Director, Stephanie King, said, Initially, the aim of our awards evening was to celebrate our staff and suppliers for all their tremendous efforts throughout the year. But we quickly saw an opportunity to utilise the event to support an important cause that is close to all of our hearts. Glenfield Hospital is a service we have all in some way or another relied on or will rely on in the future. Last year, one of our own team members, Jason, was rushed into the ward having suffered a heart attack, and this is just one of the ways we could thank the team at the hospital for their world-class care and attention. We understand that, like many hospitals around the country, Glenfield Hospital isn't getting near enough the support it needs in order to keep on providing such an exceptional service. We hope this £56,000 helps towards making even more cardiology patients' treatment even more seamless and successful. We'd also like to say a huge thank you to everyone who attended the event and put their hands in their pockets to support such a fantastic cause. Their kindness will help towards saving hundreds of lives, no doubt, as a company, we'll continue with our endeavours to support local businesses and charities. Dr. Ravi Pathmanathan from Glenfield's cardiology ward said the money raised would be put towards the world-class equipment needed to keep the department running.
This item is headed by three photographs of three dogs. And it says, of their three owners, only one of these will avoid prosecution. Dog owners who fail to ensure their pets have a collar and identification tag will soon face prosecution through the courts and an unlimited fine. Blaby District Council is set to become the first local authority in Leicestershire to enforce the 1992 Control of Dogs Order, which states that a dog in a public place must wear a collar and tag bearing the name and address, including postcode, of the owner. Michelle Aiken, Senior Animal Services Officer at Blaby District Council, said, "A collar and tag are absolutely vital in ensuring a lost dog can be returned to its owner quickly. Too many times we keep stray dogs for several days, which we wouldn't have to do if dog owners complied with the law by having a collar and tag on their pet. Although the law has been in place since 1992, 2 years after the Environmental Protection Act placed responsibility for strays upon councils, it has still not been enforced in Leicester or the county. But that's all going to change, at least in Blaby District, from April the 5th. Ms. Aiken said, "Before 1992, it was the police who were responsible for stray dogs, but the law was unclear. That's why if you ask anyone from an older generation, they will remember packs of dogs roaming the streets. The way we're looking at it is it's a lot more dogs used to have a collar and tags. So if they were spotted in the street, all the person had to do was contact the owner directly and no one else would have to be involved. Dog wardens in Blaby believe the law changed in 2016, requiring all dogs in England, Scotland and Wales to be microchipped, has led to confusion. Some assume that if they have their pet chipped and the details are up to date, then they don't have to wear a collar and tag. And of course they're wrong, because any strays will still have to be taken in and checks made, and that costs money." She added, "We appreciate there has been a lot of focus on the microchipping law, but it's important now that we look towards making every dog out in public within the district easily identifiable if it ever does get lost. Last year saw a total of 58 stray dogs collected by the council, with 38 of those not having a collar on, and each stray costing a minimum of £67 to collect. From April the 5th, dog owners found breaking the law will be prosecuted and face an unlimited fine." Ms. Aiken said, "With microchipping, owners have a 21-day period of grace and fines are limited to £500. But that's not the case with the Control of Dogs Order 1992. Instead, anyone who breaches the order will face automatic prosecution through the courts, and there is no limit to the amount of fine. It used to be £5,000, but now it will be up to a judge or magistrates. As part of the council's efforts to make dog owners aware of the law, animal services officers will be visiting parks and open spaces across the district throughout March and hand out information and will offer advice.
The next article is from Mr. Lester on Saturday. Unforgettable nights of fun at the city's Palais de Danse. I suppose it's no surprise that we remember the best times and most popular places we've been, no matter how far back. And for many Leicester folk, time and again, one name crops up in their letters to me, the Palais de Danse. Reader Brian Belcher is no different, and in the run-up to Valentine's Day, he explains why, in these delightfully nostalgic memories of this iconic city centre venue. So take your partners and enjoy. I'm writing in response to your article on your excellent page concerning Leicester's Palais de Danse, writes Mr. Belcher of Thurmaston. As a young lad, during the war and after, I used to pass the building on Humberston Gate at least once a week, either on the tram or later the bus, on our way to relatives off the Humberston Road. One day I asked my mum what the building was. She explained that it was a dance hall, and I pointed out that there was never anyone around the building when we passed by. Mum explained that it came alive in the evening, so I stored the information in my memory bank and forgot about it. Time passed, my school days came and went, and then my working life started, and I learnt to dance and met my future wife, Christine. We enjoyed strict tempo dancing, usually at the BU Institute, every Saturday fortnight, mainly due to money considerations. The Palais admittance on a Saturday night, 6 shillings and 6 pence, was out of our price range at the time. In 1956, the Mecca organisation decided to expand, so they purchased a number of dance halls in Britain, of which the Leicester Palais was one. Each of these venues was temporarily closed, refurbished and then reopened with modern and up-to-date furnishings and fittings. The jewel in the Mecca crown was the Hammersmith Palais in London, a vast auditorium where the resident band was Joe Loss's orchestra and singers who were probably the best strict tempo outfit in the country at that time. Not wanting Joe and his musicians to be unemployed while Hammersmith Palais was undergoing refurbishment, they sent the band on a tour of their dance halls with a series of one-night stands. They arrived in Leicester on Maundy Thursday, 1957. The price of admission was 4 shillings and 6 pence, each of our 9 shillings, the pair, roughly 45p today. We saved up our pennies, purchased the tickets and arrived full of optimism to be greeted by the resident quartet. After a couple of dances, we went exploring to see where everything was, arriving back on the floor just as Joe and his musicians were taking to the stand. The bandstand was not that big, but they all managed to take their places, including his 3 singers seated on chairs at the front. Slightly to the left, bubbly blonde Irish lady Rose Brennan, Jack the Lad Russ McManus and Leicester's very own Larry Gretton, whose silky voice soothed the vocals. They struck up their signature tune in the mood and we were up and running. The only problem was there was no room for Joe Loss on the bandstand. Immaculately dressed in a dark suit with tails, he had to keep dodging the dancers as he conducted the orchestra with his very famous long white baton, but he never missed a beat, much to the amusement of all concerned. It was a great night's dancing, but as the clock moved slowly towards midnight, Joe picked up the microphone and addressed us all. He told us that the management had asked him to cease playing in accordance with the Lord's Day observance rules as we approached Good Friday. But Joe added that he had told them we had all paid good money to be there, and he thought that we had not had our money's worth, so they would play on, and they did until 12:30 a.m. As the strains of the last waltz died away, everyone burst into applause as the band left the stand and returned to the dressing rooms. We hung around for a few minutes, hoping to get a word with Joe, but the band members said he was in a meeting with the management, giving them a piece of his mind, but for us it was a very special evening. A year later we were back again, the occasion, the AEI annual dance. My wife was employed there and I was awaiting my national service call-up papers. And once again there was an unusual occurrence. It was a very warm evening and after a while we went and sat on the veranda above the bandstand, relaxing with a drink. With the band on a short break, we became aware of some soft laughter, which became more pronounced, coming from the right side of the dance floor. As we could not see what was the cause, we went downstairs to investigate. On the right was a series of fold-back doors, probably used for deliveries. They were usually closed, but on that night, the end one was open. A gentleman saw the open door and decided, as there was no smoking in the hall, he would slip outside for a cough and a drag. While he was there, one of the palais staff had passed by, noticed the open door, shut and locked it, then went on his way. The gentleman, finding the door locked, started banging on the door to be admitted. After a while, the noise ceased and the dancing was resumed. Eventually, the errant smoker returned to his wife and friends to be greeted with, "Where the hell have you been?" Cue more laughter. Apparently, as he could not get back in, he had gone round to the front of the dance hall, explained what had happened, but as he had no proof of entry, he had to pay to get back in. I often wondered if his experiences that night made him give up smoking, dancing, or even both. And while on the subject of dances in Leicester, let's not forget that the City Council over the years has had some excellent ones at the De Montfort Hall. But the one that stands out for me occurred on Valentine's Night 1961, which was a Saturday. Having been married the previous year, it was our first dance as husband and wife. My good lady Christine brought a beautiful two-tone emerald green dance dress with matching shoes for the occasion. In their wisdom, the council booked the Squadronaires under the direction of Ronnie Aldrich, a silky pianist who set the right tone for the evening. Waltzes, slow foxtrots and quick steps were the order of the day. The air, as one would expect, was one of love and romance, with many couples up close and personal, including ourselves. It is fair to say an evening of slow-burning passion and, as dear Kenny Everett used to say, it was all done in the best possible taste.
We have now reached the end of the Leicester Mercury Talking Newspaper. If you wish to contact the Sound Services Department of Vista, please telephone 0116 249 8839. And so, goodbye from me.
And from Margaret, goodbye.
And also from Marion, goodbye.
And thank you very much, Ian, for recording this.